The amazing music means it's time for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Today we are presented, of course, by our amazing friends at Impact Media. Appreciate that. Once again, guys, you don't have to bow this radio. They cannot see you. I am joined. Finally, we get the band back together. No, we are not talking about Flock of Seagulls. We are talking about the amazing trio and three-headed attack that is myself. Of course, that is Coach Hill and the King ATL and Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy. Doing good. Great to be back.
Glad
to be back on.
Yeah, it's good to have you guys back on. And, you know, I guess a funny tie-in, something we didn't write on the list today, but a quick tidbit, speaking of Flock of Seagulls with their crazy hair, we all know that we have pretty nice haircuts, but did you guys see Brian Urlacher now has hair?
No, I can't say that I saw that here.
Well, first of all, you're not missing much in case you do see the photo, but apparently he went and had some sort of hair procedure done, and a buddy of his had it. He thought it looked nice, so he decided he didn't want to be bald anymore, and he now has hair.
Wow. Okay. I'm sure that's a different look on him for all of the years that he went without.
Yep, and even though concussions are no laughing matter, I do believe maybe he might have had a few we don't know about. Somebody needs to check his brainwaves there.
Yeah, that sounds like he might be getting into the CTE level.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's getting a little scary there. But he defends it and said at least he didn't do what soccer star Wayne Rooney did with the awful hair plugs. But I don't know. What I heard is his high-profile girlfriend wanted him to look a little nicer, so I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Hey, the things we do for love, right?
Exactly.
And also to echo that, to rebrand ourselves.
Right, definitely. You know, maybe he's looking at a media career, and he's tired of putting powder on his head. But like I said, tons to get into today. We'll get into the coaching carousel here in a second. Of course, we'll talk some playoffs. There's an L.A. update. News about the Senior Bowl that could affect us a little bit. And then last little tidbit. I'll go ahead and get to this tidbit now just because I feel like I'm going to forget it if not. Devin Still signed a future/reserve contract with the Houston Texans. So there's a chance we are a little bit closer to seeing Devin play.
Yeah, I mean, he's the feel-good story. I mean,
right. You
know, and that's the deal is that, you know, he didn't, quote-unquote, have the talent level to get, you know, to make a roster other than the unfortunate situation with his daughter. But, you know, sometimes a change of scenery helps. So I'm just glad to know that his daughter's doing better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy to hear that his daughter's doing better. I did get a chance to kind of keep up with that whole situation throughout the season. More importantly, I think that if he goes to Houston, that's not a bad fit for him. You know, you have some other talent around you that can kind of help you, whereas when he was in Cincinnati, he was looking to be more, you know, they were asking a little bit more out of him than he probably could have given them at the time. So I don't think Houston is a bad fit for him, especially what they already have, you know, as far as the line is concerned.
Exactly. I definitely agree. He has a better chance at being a rotation guy there than he did in Cincinnati. But I'll leave it up to you guys. You guys want to talk playoffs? You want to talk coaching carousel?
Let's get into the coaching carousel. The playoffs are kind of what they are.
The carousel's more fun, right?
Let's jump on this ride. All aboard.
Yep, exactly. And I'm going to try to go through these, hopefully not miss any of them. I have a few cheat sheets. Why don't we start with the one that, Coach, I'm glad you reminded me that you called this and told us before, but last night at about 10:30 when my phone exploded with this news, it was just not in my head that you had already told me this. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have told Lovie Smith, we no longer need you on the pirate ship.
Okay, I'd be more than happy to jump into this. As again, I predicted at the beginning of the season that this would probably be the case with them having the number one pick and with them taking Winston. If you go back and you look at the whole draft scenario, Winston was, in my opinion, was a targeted man after he won the national championship as a sophomore. You know, then it did not help that there were some things that happened along his college career that kind of forced some things early for him to come out. With that being the case, no one ever questioned his talent. No one ever questioned his intelligence. No one ever questioned his football resume. But there was an issue, or there was a great concern, if you will, with him coming into the National Football League and who would be brave enough to roll the dice. You know, for a while it was tossed back and forth, and then it got very, very heated the last 2 weeks of leading up to the draft. With that being said, Coach Smith put his career on the line, I feel. And when I say this, I don't mean from the standpoint that he did a bad thing. He took a chance on that number one pick. He picked the right guy for Tampa, hands down. With that being said, though, if you notice when you look at what's not being said, and that is no one tried to move up to battle for the positioning of Winston. Had he fallen below the top three picks, it would have been a different type of scenario and even a different type of career for him entering the NFL. However, he has done what everybody thought he would do. The numbers are there now, and now he's playing for his future contract, whether that be at Tampa or somewhere else in the National Football League. But my hats are off to Coach Smith. I think he made the right decision. I don't think he goes back on that decision. Part of the problem that Tampa has overall, and I'm going to yield the floor after this, is that they cannot I think they're looking in the wrong place. They've had three coaches in 5 years. Something's wrong with that scenario if you haven't looked at your general manager and questioned why are we at this point every year or two.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Hill said it all best. I wonder also what the fallout is, and that, you know what, this, and I'm going to take this in a different direction, and you guys don't have to chime in on this, as this is just Reggie's opinion, right? But this is why the Rooney Rule doesn't work. I mean, bottom line, I think this is where we're going to get into this whole discussion at some point, or it should be. I mean, Stephen A. Smith has already kind of thrown some stuff out there and says, you know what, who gives a guy 2 years to turn around a franchise that hadn't done anything since they won the Super Bowl, you know, under Coach it was Coach Dungy's team, but under John Gruden. But this is why it doesn't work. I mean, because there's just no way you can justify firing this guy. I get all the points that Coach Hill brought out, but by and large, I mean, you took a flailing franchise who basically won a lot more than anybody expected them to, minus a couple of bad turnovers here and there. You know, these guys are probably looking at a 500 season. Again, I don't know who else they can bring in there that can do the job that Lovie has done and setting the culture. And you can tell it in the way that these players are tweeting now and some of the comments that you're reading from some of their players. I think Tampa Bay is going to suffer from this, not only in the media, but from a free agency perspective. Because if I was a free agent, I wouldn't want to go there. Just because, you know, you know that your time is always short. Whether I'm a coach or a player, you know, you have a small window.
Yeah, and we don't have long enough of a show booked right now for me to go through all the reasons why I don't like the Tampa Bay management, especially the owners, the Glazers. But I actually heard what I think is the answer to this earlier today, and the more I heard it and the people who said it, it actually made sense. They want a particular coach to continue to work with Jameis Winston because they felt like that was the best part of his development. And also they heard through the grapevine that this particular coach they had was the top of a couple people's list who were looking for head coaches. So, Reggie, I know you're familiar with this guy. The next head coach in Tampa, after they, you know, do the Rooney Rule and interview all the people they have to for those qualifications, is going to be Dirk Cutter, their offensive coordinator.
So you already had him as an offensive coordinator.
Yep.
So, again, that doesn't make any sense to me because you already got him in-house. He's the guy that's got hands-on with Jameis anyway. So, yeah, I don't buy that one either. I get it, but I don't buy it. Unless he was planning to leave Tampa to go take a head coaching position, which I can't think of a team out there that was seriously looking at Dirk Cutter as their off as their head coach, that just doesn't vibe with me. But okay,
that's basically what it is. It comes down to they were afraid they were going to lose him to being a head coach somewhere, so they dumped Lovie Smith in order to more than likely promote him to keep him in the organization. But then again, it's Tampa, so, I mean, it's like they don't need a good reason to make a bad decision. They're almost like Cleveland South sometimes.
Absolutely. I mean, you just nailed it. That's what I see them now as. And mind you, it's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt them in free agency. It's going to hurt them in some places, and they're going to suffer from this one, I think.
I agree, gentlemen. I know we have to move on. One of the biggest concerns that I have with it is that I think that Tampa, this move was done prematurely. I think that they found the least path of resistance to make the move with Coach Smith. However, I don't think they thought the back end of this thoroughly. And what I mean by that, and I'll just echo what you said earlier, Reginald, I think that one of the biggest pieces of this is that free agency plays a huge piece in this as it pertains to your draft. When you have certain coaches in places and you have a certain reputation behind you, then there is going to be room for certain free agents and during that acquisition period where you're going to be able to attract certain entities to your team in the form of players, which now can relieve and or stress your board, depending on if you're bringing them in or you're losing them to free agency. I think that Tampa proved themselves with, you know, again, they just bringing in a young quarterback fresh out of college. You have a decent running game. Your offensive line is maturing. Your defensive line is young. Your linebackers are at best subpar. Your secondary is growing. But they proved that they could play in some tough games. They proved to be tough in their division. I think that the move was you know, in my opinion, is very premature. And I think because so many people have touched this subject and echoed the same sentiment, I think Tampa now needs to work on damage controlling what is going to be the future of the 2016-2017 season for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And instead of the ugly stick that we used to talk about when we were little kids, there's a goofy stick that's flying around the NFL right now. And the next team that it touched, because here's another suspect, possible ethical violation, in my opinion, the New York Giants have pretty much pressured Tom Coughlin to resign as their head coach. And the thing is in resigning, that means he forfeits the rest of his contract instead of if they were to cut him or let him go, then they would have to pay the back end of his contract.
Wow, that's a class act. I mean, because even on his way out, he's thinking about the team. You know what I mean? And that,
exactly.
That speaks to what New York's problem was. And he knew what it was. And I think Coach and I touched on this a little bit before. You haven't given him the talent that he needs. You didn't retool
right.
The talent. And Coach, it drives me to a conversation, and I won't get too deep into it because I don't want to expose, you know, just your inner dealings with the league but and your profession. But it gets into the reality that what happens when a team wins the Super Bowl. My goodness. I mean, every team you can pick other than maybe the Patriots, that when they win the Super Bowl, it's like they just go into this oblivious state where they can't get any talent retooling. So it really, really brought it forth to my eyes with just what Jeremy just said. So hats off to Coach Coughlin. I've heard that, you know, I read somewhere that he definitely is open to coaching somewhere else, and I absolutely hope he gets another coaching job.
again, he's another one of those coaches that has that type of respect within inside the league, and I say that term strongly. He is a player's coach. For the last 3 years, the players have played for him to keep that job. They're not happy with the decision because, again, they understand that there are some areas that they don't have a stud, if you will, at some positions, but they were slowly getting back there. They bring in Beckham. You know, you have to retool it slowly because, again, you lose so much after a Super Bowl. I would like to parallel baseball and the World Series to the Super Bowl and some of the recipients on that end, just to kind of give you some insight, Reggie, on that. The owner of the New York Yankees once said that the difference in my team and everybody else's organization inside of the Major League Baseball is that I put 98% of the money back into the organization and the brand and only pay 2% of the profit. That's why New York was always able to pay these astronomical amounts for the best possible player out there. Okay? What happens normally and what you see in professional sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, we'll just name the major three, okay? An owner has spent a tremendous amount of money over the years getting to this point. Once they get there, then what they're trying to do or what happens most of the time is that they're trying to recoup a lot of the money on the back end that they spent on the front end for years. That's why immediately, normally after a Super Bowl, it is very, very difficult to keep a team together because what you've done now is driven up the price for every player on the team based on the way the contracts are structured, okay? They have this playoff money. They get this Super Bowl money. This, again, is earmarked money that, you know, it's like almost like the lottery. You know, 32 teams come in, only one team going to walk away with it. So with that being said, it's additional monies that the ownership group has had to spend out that they want, but they wasn't really anticipating, you know, until it becomes a reality. So that's why normally the rosters get wiped. You only keep about 5 players, 10 at best from a Super Bowl team, and you start retooling around those 5 or 10 players for the next couple of years. So, but then what it does for those other players, it drives their prices up, and then they off into free agency, normally finding what they were looking for in another 3 or 5 year extension in their career. So that's what you're starting to find. New England is one of those teams. Seattle now has become one of those teams that has learned how to balance salary cap and salary. They are finding very creative ways to keep the continuity of those teams together. So that's why it's not surprising when you see them back in the Super Bowl. They have kind of figured out the formula. I think their ownership group they've kind of looked at what New York did in baseball, and that kind of has helped them along the way.
Yep, absolutely. As a lifetime Yankees fan, I can attest to that strategy, and that's exactly what's going on in the NFL. A few of the candidates for the Giants job, they've already talked to their offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo, who did a lot in Green Bay. He's worked with a lot of big quarterbacks. They want to keep him around. The defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, and also Lions defensive coordinator, Terrell Austin. It's a lot of the usual suspects from last year that didn't get jobs. Bears offensive coordinator, Adam Gase, who is also a leading candidate somewhere else I'll talk about in a minute. Jaguars offensive line coach, Doug Marrone, who coached in Buffalo. And Panthers defensive coordinator, Sean McDermott, are all the ones that are being considered up there. At this point, did
Doug
they go
Marrone,
for the short
that coached the Bucks?
No, the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, okay. Okay, I'm thinking about the guy from Rutgers. Sorry.
Yeah, you're talking about I forgot his name, but he's back in college. But let's see. Yeah, pretty much it's the usual suspects as far as those. And are they looking for the short-term answer to win now with a 35-year-old aging quarterback in Eli Manning, or do you think they're going to try to build for the years after that?
I think you have to rebuild at this point. I mean, you know, it's kind of run its course, and getting rid of Coughlin kind of says that. You know, hey, we're willing to – the fans aren't happy with what we're doing now. We may as well take the opportunity to rebuild. That's my guess.
I think they're right now primed to rebuild. The fact that you have already made the move on the head coach speaks volumes to where you want to go in your draft. I think a lot of players at this point on several of these teams are playing for their jobs because they don't know who's going to come in. They don't know where they're going to end up, especially if they're at contract year or very close to it within this season or two. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. I think New York is probably one of the toughest jobs in the NFL to have because it's New York. You know, they're always in the media. That job is very tough because of players and that city. Again, that is not speaking anything negative. It's just it has, you know, I mean, look at it. This past coach, it was the only other tenured coach outside of Parcells that's been there, you know, prior to another coach that had been there almost, you know, 20 years. So, you know, it's one of those jobs that you have to really, you know, you want to become a head coach, but you have to really look at the city that you're going into and look at some of the distractions that come along or the responsibilities for a better term that come along with coaching in that city and having the players being a part of that community.
Right. And if Tampa Bay and the Giants aren't already a big mess, the next two teams really by far are the most entertaining, but by far the biggest messes. They really are every bit of a carousel. And we'll start with the Cleveland Browns, who told Mike Patton his services were no longer needed. I think that actually helps him out. Let's see. Ray Farmer was also let go. He's the GM. They've already interviewed Adam Gase, Terrell Austin, and Doug Marrone, the same usual suspects. They want to interview DC for Cincinnati, Paul Gunther, and Sean McDermott. They also want to talk to Hugh Jackson, who's the offensive coordinator for the Bengals. And in typical Browns fashion, Cowboys secondary coach Jerome Henderson is supposed to interview with them too. I mean, the three of us might as well interview for it because we got just as good a chance as anybody. And not to mention, on top of that, they hired former New York Mets executive Paul DePodesta to be the chief strategy officer. Basically, he's an analytics guy. If you watch Moneyball, he's the character that Jonah Hill played.
Well, yeah, I'm with you on your statement that any one of us could probably interview for it. I'm surprised, or wouldn't be surprised, to see them even interview Mike Smith. They need some level of stability, I mean, at all points, right? So you definitely need to get somebody that's just going to come in there to establish a culture. Right, wrong, or indifferent, Mike Smith, when he came to Atlanta, did just that. You know, he got the team back on the right track. And I think that's just what they need right now.
Well, with the move with the baseball exec, I can tell you from the football community, there are some people probably don't want to see that work out. And the reason they don't, you know, want to see that work out, and that's just being honest, guys, is because if you start doing this hybrid executive move like you see sometime in corporate America, the problem is that you have some scouts, you have some assistant coaches, some coordinators. It begins to lessen the jobs for those who want to move up in the profession. And so if you start this crossing over, again, he did a great job when it came to baseball, but it's not football. It's a different athlete. It's a different market. And in corporate America, it can work because it's about bottom lines. If that's the direction that they're going, then, you know, by all means, say that. But right now, as it hits perception-wise, what value does he bring to the team other than his experience from a baseball scouting side of things? You know, that's it. I mean, when it comes to football, we're talking apples and oranges, and they're both fruit, but they fall from two different trees.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, we all know how the Moneyball concept works in baseball, where it's about on-base percentages and that sort of thing. But, yeah, I can't for the life of me figure out how you're going to use that same type of strategy, you know, as why you would bunt with one out in the seventh inning with a runner on second in a cold city, as opposed to, you know, what you would do in Green Bay in January. I don't know how it's going to cross over. And, you know, Paul DePodesta is a good dude. He's done a lot of really good stuff for baseball. He's really kind of changed the scene there and made it more appealing to a younger generation, even though he was just being himself. That wasn't really his intention, I don't think. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think if this works out, then Cleveland's going to be looked at as an out-of-the-box thinking success. And I don't know if the community's ready for that.
Well, again, you just said it best, Jeremy, and what he was able to do. It's about the bottom line, guys. I mean, all of this out the door, you know, they're looking for ways to make money, and they know now what their fan base looks like, and that's what they're going after. So, I mean, talent, Super Bowls and all of that will come, but right now it's about making as much money as you can. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, on the other side of that coin, Reggie, the only problem that they're going to run into that is that it's going to be very difficult to get the type of coach you probably need to come into Cleveland right now. To set what you just talked about earlier, the culture. Veteran coaches are always going to look at those situations. All money is not good money. And every situation, every opportunity doesn't mean it, you know, it pans into a good situation. So it depends on how much authority they're giving this gentleman to basically be a part of the football operation side of things. I think what you end up with is, again, a coach that's on the horizon, but I don't see a veteran coach taking Cleveland right now under those terms.
No, not at all. And the last of the just absolutely clueless franchises, we're going to make a stop in the Bay Area here where I don't know that they're my relatives. I don't claim them currently, but the Yorks are the laughingstock of the NFL as far as the way they're running the 49ers. They get rid of their coach, Jim Tomsula, probably a year late, and he was only there for a year, so hopefully everybody gets that reference. I mean, you get rid of one of the best coaches possibly of this generation in Jim Harbaugh just because you kind of can't get along with him. All he did was make your team win in like 2 years. He's already done it in less than a year at Michigan. And then now you're looking at, I mean, you're looking at starting over again. Your team is awful. It's worse than Philadelphia's roster. In a way, you know, you trim the fat like Chip did in Philadelphia, but at least he won games in the process. I mean, what else can be said about San Francisco right now besides they're just a big mess?
Well, like, again, I don't think there's anybody that didn't think that Tomasino wasn't a stopgap anyway. I mean, I when they hired him, we all knew that that's what it was. They were waiting for this coaching carousel. They'll go out and hire some big-name coach to come in because that's just what their fan base commands. I wasn't surprised. I mean, we're hearing now Chip Kelly and I believe it's Mike Shanahan
mm-hmm.
both have expressed an interest in wanting to coach them. I know me on my side of the fence, I'm actually hoping Shanahan gets it so maybe he can convince his son to come, but that's a whole other conversation.
I'll help you pack.
Right.
I'll help you pack. I'll fly it out there.
We all knew Tomasino was just the scapegoat. You know that he's who they'll blame all of the retirements and all of the, you know, the player retirements and Kaepernick's decline and the whole nine on, and they'll bring somebody in to try to save the day.
Well, I'll add only this one footnote: he was cheap. You know, and I don't mean he was.
Right.
I mean, when you're looking at the background, when you're looking at the experience, you know, again, I always like to bring this up. When Coach Smith was in Chicago and he was making $600,000 as their head coach and was in a Super Bowl. So, and then they fired him out of a 10-6 record. So that is just one of those anomalies, guys. And again, he I promise you, he wasn't a high-dollar coach for them. Especially with all of the money they had to pay out, all of the money they had to do to get out of the contract, probably with Harbaugh. I mean, he saw the writing on the wall, and he was glad to go. So it wasn't an issue for him leaving San Francisco because, you know, again, he comes from a football family, and when you see the writing on the wall, you can't ignore what you see. And so right now, San Francisco has, you know, with them, you know, getting the new stadium and all that, they had to cut costs. And now it's going to take them probably another 3 to 5 years to get back to where they need to even be remotely close to where they once were. You know, and again, you know, my hat's off to Coach Harbaugh, but again, let's go back and look at how that team was built. You know, we have to give Coach Singletary his due props of putting those pieces together that put that team to where it was.
Yep, I absolutely agree. And based off the roster that San Francisco does have, especially the quarterbacks and running backs, I would say Chip Kelly is by far should be the leading candidate, even though the 49ers aren't really saying anything, which is nothing new. They're not very good at communication, so in some ways maybe they are related to me.
No, Jeremy, don't put yourself in that boat.
Another thing, too, beware of Coach Kelly, because, again, you have to understand that players are also very intelligent and they're very forward-thinking. So they're looking at what happened in Philly as well with the chopping block. And you'll have, you know, if he does become the head coach, you know, you think they're bad now. Again, I'm not going to put this on Coach Kelly, so I'm not trying to by any means curse, you know, the ability of becoming the head coach there. But you're probably going to have some guys that are going to leave as well. Ahead of the gap. So,
well,
you know, that's another thing that you have to look at.
The one thing I would say about Kelly, Coach Kelly, is that I don't think he got what he was always looking for. He never got the quarterback to fit his scheme. And if you're planning to keep a Kaepernick, that right there is a very interesting combination to bring a Kelly out there with him.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to keep Kaepernick. I don't think they're going to keep him. I think he did a lot of paper money. He's year to year. That's why they was able to bench him without any problem. I think the question would be, can Kelly rebuild an organization like that? Because, again, they're going to still lose a lot more within the next year or two anyway, just the free agents and contracts.
Yep, exactly. We're going to try to run through some of these pretty quickly. Those are just the bigger ones that we wanted to get to. Of course, we talked about Philadelphia. Even though the organization has expressed interest in keeping Bradford around, I think they're just being nice about that because I don't know that their actual, you know, future quarterback is on their roster.
No, I agree. I'm not sure
he's in the NFL.
I agree with that also.
Yes, I agree.
The usual suspects in on that job as well, according to the list there. I don't need to go through the same names. The Miami Dolphins, who they say they're giving Dan Campbell an interview, but we know good and well he's either going to be like assistant head coach / tight end coach, or he's going somewhere else because he's going to get kind of screwed out of that job.
Yeah, he's not ready for a head coaching job, I don't think. I mean, I think not right now. I think over time he will be. I'm going to tell you another guy to look out for that's going to sneak back in the league, I believe, and that's Jim Mora out there after UCLA. I think he's going to find himself one of these head coaching gigs, and maybe a Cleveland or, you know, it'll be a small market team, but I think you'll see him show up somewhere as well.
Well, okay, my candidate for Miami will be Mike Smith. Look for him to somewhere and somehow emerge in Miami.
Yeah, I can see that. Either him or Shanahan will end up there.
Yeah, either way, we got to find Shanahan a job. So we'll work on that after the show. Maybe put in some calls, see what we know. I think there's a fan base of fans that will definitely help him pack and possibly buy him a house even. We could do a GoFundMe account.
I was going to say, I'll pay for it.
Wow, Reggie, you are not wasting any time.
No.
Hey, we got to fix this thing. Whether the Falcons are our team or not, they are the hometown team to us. So, you know, we got to protect them. But let's see, next team on the block, of course, the Tennessee Titans. I don't think they're going to keep Malarkey around. I doubt Chip Kelly goes there because Tennessee, even though they're a usually lower-end franchise, they're not going to go that direction. They can't afford to lose what little bit of talent they do have in case Chip decided to start cutting people again.
Well, he's got Mariota. That's why I think Chip Kelly ends up in Tennessee. He reunites with Mariota. And that guy knows his offense already. and now you just build on what you have. I mean, he's not, there's not a whole lot of talent to get rid of.
Sure.
I mean, in Tennessee. But the main piece you have Mariota. They get to recognize their ROI out of this guy. I mean, I think that's where Chip Kelly ends up.
I'm not sure. I can see the marriage made. Overall, though, I think the question would be is how long would he have the contract?
You mean Chip Kelly?
They would have, yes, they would have to sign him to a long-term deal because with that being the case, they would need to make a move where he could be there for a while and then build those pieces around. You know, the NFL has become a very impatient place.
Right.
If they do decide to make that move, they're going to have an expectation on Coach Kelly to turn that team in two years. They're going to say,
but,
you get the quarterback you've always wanted, and you better win. And you better win
right
now.
Right. And, I mean, you know, and again, that most teams go to an organization, or most coaches go to an organization that don't have at least a quarterback that they want. Right, he gets to go through the door saying, "I know exactly what to do with this guy. I know his strengths. I know his weaknesses. I know everything about him. I know how to make him great." I mean, how can you turn that down? You just can't.
Well, no, you don't have to necessarily have to turn it down. But the interesting part about it is going to be they're going to expect him to win right now with him, and realistically. You know, one in one thing and having the realism of another is a different thing. And I don't think Tennessee has a lot of holes they have to fill. And
right.
I think the expectation would be so great on him coming through the door under that premise that you have the quarterback and now we expect you to at least get us the 500 first year out. No exceptions to that rule can be, you know, could possibly detrimental for him. So I think he would like Tennessee. But I don't think realistically he can see the pieces in time unless they give him a 5-year deal.
Right, especially after what happened to Lovey. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I just as far as they'll be an entertaining team if Chip goes there just because of the probably daily, possibly more than once a day, spats between, you know, Chip Kelly and arguably probably their second most talented guy, Taylor Lewan, who is just not going to put up with Chip's, you know, way of doing things. So it would be probably a newspaper battle. We'd hear a lot about it.
Yeah.
But let's see. Next on the block, are we through? I think we're through all the vacancies. So still not sure about Detroit and Jim Caldwell, but from what I'm hearing, when they pick a GM, it's going to be up to the GM. But you also had Megatron, who hadn't decided if he's going to stay around or not. So, I mean, maybe he's going to go back and be an engineer at this point. I'm not sure what his plan is.
Hey, he's a heck of an engineer, that's for sure. He's got the credentials.
He does. I doubt that. Go ahead.
I always see Jim Caldwell and feel sorry for him. I don't know what it is about his face and just his demeanor. But I always just feel envy, just pity for him. I don't know. It's something he just doesn't have. And I don't know what it is, but, I mean, hopefully he gets a chance to stick around. And maybe, hopefully he gets a chance to stick around. But Detroit is, after getting so close and now you're back in the cellar again, it's got to be tough on that fan base.
I agree, Reggie. I think that I don't know if he survives it. I hope that he does. But I think that even if he survives it, I think they lose Calvin Johnson. And believe it or not, the team I'm going to put in bed with him now, and I would find a way to try to make it work, would be Atlanta. It gives them the two DBs and the vertical threat that they want, and that would be the last puzzle on the offense that they would need. They have the running game. They have the offensive line. It's pretty decent now. A few more pieces there. But if you get two verticals and those two type of guys that demand double teams, you open up everything else and you can play with a left line if they don't have the money for them.
Yeah, I actually read an article today that stated that that Calvin should be a target as well as Von Miller and some other guys. And I know we'll get into that later. But, I wouldn't mind seeing them come home. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, if Atlanta were to add Calvin on one side and had Julio on the other, Roddy White would lead the league in receptions.
Well, actually, Roddy White would be out, I think. I think you bring Calvin in, I think Roddy's out.
His cap number is $6 million next year, guys. They're not going to pay $6 million for the production they got out of Roddy this year. And he's already publicly stated that he's not looking to have a pay cut. So we'll see how that turns out.
Well, yeah, if he's not willing to do that, and at this point, if Roddy really wanted to continue his longevity in the league, in my opinion, because he's not a vertical threat anymore and was not very much of a vertical threat throughout his career. I mean, he just never was a fast guy. He knew how to play football, and he made tough catches, and he's a great receiver because he works hard. But I think if you move Roddy to slot, if he would be willing to play slot, I think he could rebrand himself and play at least another 4 years in the league, in my opinion, because he's not taking any major, major injuries. So, I mean, well, the speed has never really been there, and it's subsided over the years. Moving him to slot, there's not a linebacker that'll be able to cover him, nor a safety.
Yeah, if I venture to say, I don't think Arthur Blank's the type of guy that you go publicly with any type of statements like he's made along the lines of ultimatums. So I don't think. Unfortunately, I would have loved to see him retire as a Falcon, but I don't think it's going to happen. So yeah, bring Calvin on home. I definitely like to see it, not for the $10 million plus he was getting every year, but definitely, you know, give him a 1 or 2 year contract, and there are some guys we can get rid of that can absorb that space.
Right, and we'll get more into that, obviously, in the next couple weeks and later on here in a minute. We'll go through the people that are safe currently so far. Buffalo is going to keep their GM and head coach, of course, Doug Whaley and Rex Ryan. I mean, they just got there, and they get new owners, so there's no reason to change that. Jason Garrett still in Dallas. That's no surprise whatsoever. But, you know, you never know. If he had another goofy low-level season, I could see the next lame duck coming in Dallas. Gus Bradley still in Jacksonville. I think he's got 1 year to at least go 8-8, possibly 9-7. If he doesn't, I believe they're looking for a new one in Jacksonville. Jeff Fisher's still with the Rams. Of course, that's just so they can try to move to L.A., which we'll talk about in a minute. Same thing with the Chargers, keeping Mike McCoy. Pagano still in Indy was kind of shocking, but in a way it wasn't, because supposedly in the six-hour meeting that the GM and owner, two different people, but owner Jim Irsay apparently was having a text conversation with Sean Payton's agent. And I think when that deal fell through, they couldn't figure out the compensation between New Orleans and Indianapolis. They signed Pagano to the, like, 4-year extension. And then Sean Payton come out and said he don't see himself anywhere else but in New Orleans.
Yeah, that was very interesting, too. I thought for sure Pagano was going to be gone. I actually wanted to see him go somewhere else. He's a class act. I think he's a great coach. I'll say something about Gus Bradley. When I had the opportunity to go down and see Jacksonville get beat by the Falcons in Jacksonville, I will say this.
Can we get ready for some water?
Their team is much better than I thought. Blake Bortles is a much better quarterback than I ever thought. And you can see it on the field. You can see them getting ready to turn the corner. And I think you got to give that to Gus Bradley. So I think he has more than a year. I think, you know, they get the right pieces in place. They spent a ton of money on what's the kid, Justin Thomas, Julian Thomas, pardon me. But he couldn't stay healthy. But I think they're just a few pieces away from making a little bit of noise. Those guys aren't far behind.
Well, if I may chime in. Again, that's one of those teams that I spoke of earlier. You know, I always pick my teams 2 years out where they will be. And Jacksonville is one of those teams. If you notice, I said Tampa would be one of those teams in the next 2 years. I think Jacksonville will be one of those teams in the next 2 years, as I picked Arizona about 2 years ago, Kansas City, those type of things. So I look at organizations. I do agree with you, Reverend. I think they're right there on the cusp. They have a few more pieces. They're young, but they're maturing. Bortles is everything I told you guys he would be coming out of the combine. I liked him coming out of the combine. I thought he was, he had all of the tangibles that were in place. He's starting to show that now. He's comfortable in the offense. And look again for, I'm calling him now, look for Jacksonville to be one of those teams that's going to compete with this upcoming season, but more certainly in 2017.
Well, I told a lot of people this year, and I'm doing like you do. I'm kind of projecting for the future, but I told a lot of our fan base that in case your team's not doing so well or in case you really want to be entertained, two teams to keep your eye on the next couple years are the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Oakland Raiders. Both of them are so close to turning the corner. They've got super quarterbacks. They're young. They got weapons they can throw to. Their defenses are kind of starting to put it together. And these GMs and coaches are really making some good decisions.
Absolutely. And I'm going to throw out my Reggie's thought here real quickly. If Clemson wins the national championship, look for Dabo Freeney to end up in a coaching position. Mark my words. Write it down, Jeremy.
I would, but the pen stopped writing. So we got it on tape, so we'll you know, for next week, we'll make sure we have a pen that writes, and we'll make sure we have you some water, because I think you're having some sinus issues or something there with that last segment. So we'll get that cleared up for you.
Hey, Reggie, I think that if Clemson does pull this off, which I don't think that they will, but, you know, it's always everybody has to have a dream. I do feel that if he does, he will be one of those coaches that can end up maybe somewhere like Michigan or somewhere else like that down the stretch. He will have an opportunity in college to be one of those top five coaches being the highest paid. I think he likes college. I think it's safety. I think it's safe there. And I think he would just wait probably another, you know, contract before he just would entertain the NFL. Because he's looking at what's happening right now. You know, you're gold today and then you go play tomorrow.
Yep. They'll win the national championship. Write that down, too.
Oh, I'm with you on that one. I pegged them since before the 14 playoff.
Okay, so both of you all got Clemson. I'm going to tell you, Alabama's defense is going to eat them alive. They got some surprises that's coming down the stretch. And when here comes the boom. All I will say, Kirby Smart leaves there with a bang. Mark my words.
We'll see. Go Tigers. ACC, baby.
Honestly, it doesn't matter to me. I just want it to be a good game, even though I probably won't get a chance to watch it. But moving on real quick, the Senior Bowl is coming up, and the Dallas Cowboys and Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be the coaching staff that are coaching these guys. That's Jacksonville's third year in a row, and I think this will absolutely help Dallas maybe try to get back in it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot. This is going to be a good draft, guys. This is going to be one of those drafts where there's a lot of depth. There's a lot of great picks out there. There's a lot of sleeper picks. I think your best players are going to be post the first round. I think it's going to be some surprises in it. So I'm looking forward to watching this game.
Yeah, you know, always the Senior Bowl brings out, you know, the opportunity to be hands-on with a lot of those young men. I do agree. I think football now in general has become a game of chess. It has always been a chess, you know, match, but I think it's now becoming a game of chess. And now players are coming into the league so much more prepared. I think that you're going to start seeing a lot more teams in the future go back to what I call the Coach Jimmy Johnson phenomenon. You're going to start seeing them pass off. You see the Patriots do it all the time. They pass off. They start picking up a lot of guys around the third, fourth round. You're going to start finding a lot more teams moving in that direction to be able to build these teams for the future. Now, not building them for now, but 3 years from now, those players will be those players that no one really thought about, and the coaching staff and the scouting departments that know how to put this together always seem to end up on top with this. That's the secret to the NFL, the future to it, the whole idea of being able to keep salaries under the cap, and you're going to start seeing more and more that this year, watch more teams trade down for more players than trade up for one or two spots.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And, of course, the other big topic going on right now before we get into the playoffs is the Los Angeles update, where St. Louis, San Diego, and Oakland have all filed their paperwork. So now it comes down to the owners' meetings on the, I believe, 12th and 13th. They're coming up next week. And if they can get 24 owners to vote in their favor, then they have a good chance of going to L.A. But if not, then I guess they have to try it a different way. The way I heard it, there's a lot of backdoor politicking going on right now, and you have kind of the old school guys and the new school guys. that are kind of going, you know, back and forth as far as that kind of stuff. I don't know that there's a team that's going to make it out there this year. I don't think they're going to be able to get 24 people to vote in their favor.
Yeah, that whole thing is just perplexing to me. I mean, I've never really understood why LA could never get a team. They're a big, big market team. I mean, USC is as close in a lot of circles considered to be the NFL team for LA anyway. But I thought for sure St. Louis was going to be the team that was going to go.
Well, one of the things I'm thinking about, and again, this discussion has gone on for quite some time within side of our circle. I think that what you'll end up seeing, honestly, and this is just, again, this is my opinion, not information I have from a lot of the sources, is that you're going to probably find they keep it in proximity. I think the future will be that you'll still have a lot of dual-team stadiums. Why? You can build bigger facilities. You can have more home games with two different teams, kind of like the formula that you have in L.A. now with the Clippers and the Lakers. As you know, as these teams grow, they get bigger, they get better. The fan base is there. I think logistically, it makes more sense to try to get Oakland and the Chargers together than trying to move St. Louis out there, because you've had an L.A. Rams team before, and again, that fan base is not there in L.A. for the Rams. So, again, at least if you keep it in state, and again, I'm just thinking logically here, you still have some type of way of salvaging or containing a fan base versus trying to implant a team, go through the whole big marketing strategy of getting people to buy into it again and go from there. So moving St. Louis, I think, although they want to move and they're probably a forerunner to move, it's probably not the best strategical move for the NFL because, again, you got to realign, you know, divisions as a result of not having a team in proximity in the Midwest.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And as far as combining teams, you know, we were talking before the show about Atlanta's not in a proximity to where they could combine with another team. But especially just to get Reggie's reaction here, I mean, technically you could build a joint stadium, let's say, in West Alabama and share one with New Orleans, or you could go to Augusta and share one with the Panthers, or maybe Macon and share one with Tampa. What would you think about that, Reggie?
Not.
You wouldn't want to travel over to Augusta to see a Panthers and Falcons game?
My recently purchased PSLs will be on the market right now.
But I do
not.
What about sharing one with the Jaguars maybe in Savannah?
No, we've already beat them.
Did it? You know, I haven't got... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. I do think that is going to be the future, though. I do feel that you're going to see teams, you're going to start seeing the market open up in such a way because, again, like we, you know, like we were talking prior to the show, Jeremy, it's going to offer an opportunity to pay for a stadium faster and also have football in there, you know, 70% of the time during the season. A lot of times what happens to a lot of these big facilities, Atlanta won't struggle with this just because it's one of those cities that everybody wants to come and visit and be a part of. You have a tough time in the off season trying to backfill for such large venues. You know, you have a primary tenant, but then you have people on a 6-month lease basically passing through. And so I think part of this new idea for the NFL is to try to get teams that are close in proximity. Because they do have a rule on the radius as to why Atlanta, that's why Alabama can't get a team. It's
right.
Because of the radius rule. But with that, I think moving toward the future, you'll start finding that this is going to be more beneficial because, again, you're adding 8 more home games that you would not have, you know, the facility being used just that much more for its primary purpose versus trying to bring in, you know, for the lack of better terms and no disrespect for those who like monster trucks, you know, competition and whatnot. It's just harder to get those venues year after year to sell versus having football there, you know, a majority of the time.
Well, I promise you that even when Arthur Blank went to the table with this stadium, he knew what he had in his back pocket. He knew he had the soccer team coming. He knew he had the University of Georgia, which is really like another NFL team as well as far as the fan base is concerned. And he had the SEC championship and the Alabama-Georgia game. And, you know, he had all these different things that are going to fill that stadium much more than any other venue would have, even the Falcons. So, yeah, unless you can prove that you can, like you say, Coach, that they can actually fill that with some real events, quote-unquote, and I use real loosely, yeah, you'll see a lot more of that.
Yeah, and that is one of those cities I agree with that just it just has that makeup where it won't struggle like that. Soccer comes in, I think they're going to get World Cup, they'll end up eventually getting a Super Bowl, they'll end up getting a national championship. There are some things that were already on the table for Atlanta prior to the first, you know, shovel stuck in the ground to break ground on the new facility.
Yep, absolutely. And as we get into the end of end zone here, before we jump into some Falcon stuff in a minute, of course we got to talk about these playoff games. We're going to do it pretty quickly. But and then we'll also write down our picks. We'll see how good we do because I feel like we're going to be conflicted on a handful of these. Of course, starting on January, it's a 4:30 start on ESPN. They are so proud to have this game, and it could be actually my favorite game of the four. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to go to Houston to take on the Texans. Reggie, what do you think about this one?
Kansas City. I actually picked Kansas City to go to the Super Bowl.
I can see that.
That's my Super Bowl pick. Yep.
What you got, Coach?
I have Kansas City just because they just have a lot more pieces of their puzzle together. I don't think that the Texans with their quarterback issue is enough that's going to give them over the hump. So Kansas City wins it. Super Bowl, don't see that, but do see them at least possibly vying for the for the division, for the championship, the conference championship.
The Chiefs have been the surprise. Even though a couple of people predicted that when it gets colder, the Chiefs play better, and they definitely have. I don't know. I was already going to be the oddball before you guys picked, but I got Houston, who last time I checked still has one of the most dominating defenses in the league, and it's just right. Yeah, but what did it do for you? Because they're playing a playoff game, and you guys are watching it.
Yeah, they're in a terrible AFC. We beat them, too.
Either way, I got Houston.
Point well, thank you. Okay.
I can't argue with that. So you did beat them. So, but let's see.
I mean, I just said that based on your defense. Based on your defense reference. I mean, we hung what 40 on them. So
yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Now was that before you dropped almost 8 games in a row, or was that sometime in between it?
We beat Jacksonville, too, that after we dropped almost 8 games in a row, too. I'll bring that up.
Yeah, but, you know, neither one of those teams have a defense.
Ooh, I love it. Don't you love it, Coach?
Hey, I will just stay on the sideline with my popcorn and keep it ready.
we're gonna get to your team soon enough, Coach, so we'll get there on that one. But the second Saturday game is an 8:15 start. CBS has got that one. That is the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Cincinnati Bengals. Coach, I'll start with you.
You know what? That's one of those games that's going to be tough to call because it depends on what team shows up. Right now,
right.
The forerunner would be Pittsburgh because I think they just have, again, they're just a much more complete team. However, Cincinnati is getting tired of being that team that gets there not finishing. They're on a run right now. So I think really in that game, honestly, guys, it's going to boil down to injury. It's going to boil down to who can keep their quarterbacks healthy and who can keep their receivers, from hitting the ground so much. I think it's going to be one of those games they're going to battle out. Right now, I will have to go with Pittsburgh and give them the edge because of experience. But that's going to be a very good football game. That's going to be one of the better games that you see.
Okay, Reggie, who you got?
Coach said exactly what I was going to say. It's Pittsburgh, but only because they have the experience. But I it would not surprise me if Cincinnati pulled that game out.
Especially when Andy Dalton is not starting for them, so we'll never know if he can win a playoff game, or we won't know at this point. I don't know. I kind of like AJ McCarron a little bit because he's playing like he did at Alabama, where, you know, put this in perspective. When he played at Alabama, they had a great defense. The Bengals have a great defense. The offense relies on the running game with the occasional pass and making him – he only has to make a couple plays here and there. That's pretty much the same thing the Bengals do. He's got a supporting staff. I hate to go against Big Ben, but the fact that not only is Le'Veon Bell done for the year, but D'Angelo Williams has been in a walking boot for the last 3 days. I don't think that they could balance out with a great run game. Big Ben can't sling the ball to any of those three guys, but I'm going to be the oddball again and say A.J. McCarron gets Cincinnati their first playoff win in a long time.
Hey, you're not far off from it. I think you wouldn't be wrong with that decision.
Oh, this is a pick-em game. This is a coin flip.
Let me ask you guys something. In Hightower, the running back up there right now for them?
No, Hightower is with New Orleans.
Okay, that's where I saw him. Okay, I know he had reemerged. He was in Arizona one time. So, okay, he's in New Orleans. Okay. Yeah, this is one of those games that, you know, it's going to come down to who makes that last play, strategically makes that last play. I think they're both pretty much balanced in some areas. But, again, I'm with you, Reginald. I think that the fact that they have a little more experience, they have their quarterback in play, and I think that's where the difference may be. I think, but again, you know, McCarron he's used to winning. He understands how to play in a game of that magnitude. So it's going to be a toss up. That can go either way.
And then, of course, that brings us to the Sunday games. The first game's on NBC, which is kind of weird for them to have Sunday night football and Sunday afternoon, but it's only confusing to them. 1:05 start. Of course, that is the arguably hottest team and strongest team right now in the playoffs, the Seattle Seahawks, as they travel to Minnesota to play the Vikings. I'm pretty torn on this one, so I'll see if you guys can sway me one way or the other. Reggie, we'll start with you.
I'm going to go with Seattle. That's my other Super Bowl pick. I think it's Seattle, Kansas City in the Super Bowl. I say Seattle because Teddy Bridgewater, I think he's decent, you know, and he's done a good job. But I think that defense scares the bejesus out of him. And on top of that, now you got Adrian Peterson's kind of banged up right now. So yeah, I go Seattle.
All right, Coach.
Seattle for all of the reasons that have been mentioned. And on top of that, they are a team right now that are hitting. They are hitting on all four cylinders. They are just that young version of the Patriots when they had their run. So again, I think that Seattle will. I think Seattle is going to wipe them out because I don't think Minnesota just have. They don't have enough. They don't have enough bullets in the chamber, for the lack of a better term. They just don't have enough depth on their roster to match up player for player, for situation, but more importantly, when injuries start to enter into the game, you know, whether it's concussion protocol, whether it's hamstring pulls, whatever it may be, I don't think they have enough depth to plug and play and still, you know, fight off or hold off of Seattle.
Well, like I told you, Coach, before we got on here for the show, there's 31 teams in the National Football League that want the Minnesota Vikings to win this game because nobody wants to play Seattle right now. But I guess this might be the only time we do it tonight, but
it's funny because it's true.
We got across the board the homer pick here. I got Seattle as well. For the same things you guys said, especially you, Reggie, when you said Adrian Peterson, who is 95% of their offense, is banged up a little bit. Seattle does have a spectacular defense, and Teddy Bridgewater is just too skinny to me and too young. I don't like him as a great quarterback going forward. I think he'll have a couple year run and he'll go back to doing something else. So I got Seattle. And then of course the last game we have, the 4:40 start, they've actually moved it up, or they moved it down 10 minutes. It's supposed to be 4:30, but I don't know, maybe Aaron Rodgers needs the help. The Green Bay Packers, this is the Fox game, of course. The Green Bay Packers are gonna travel to Washington D.C. to play against the Redskins, who, you know, 8 months ago, didn't know if that was going to be their team nickname or not. Coach, who do you have in this one?
Believe it or not, I think Green Bay will beat Washington. It's not because I don't think Washington is a good football team. I think because when you're looking at who they're playing, I think that defensively we have enough to stop them. We have enough to get the stops, to get Aaron enough touches. I think the problem right now with our offense is that our offensive line has been decimated. We have a decent running game. We have to figure out something at receiver. But the difference in this game, and again, why Green Bay would win it, look at the possessions. Rodgers will end up probably with two more possessions than Washington, and that will be the difference in the game.
Okay. Reggie?
This is actually a tough one for me. Green Bay is coming off a pretty terrible run for any – I've actually been shocked to see how bad they've been playing here lately. I pick Green Bay slightly, and that's only because of Aaron Rodgers. But it would not surprise me to see Washington pull this out.
All I can say is I got the Redskins, and do you like that?
We beat them, too.
It's good that you guys beat all these playoff teams. The bad thing is you didn't make it in. But I actually feel like you could be in the next year or so. I just feel that. Go ahead.
No, I was about to say, surely if Atlanta could beat them, we got a good chance.
You would think so, but it is the NFL, so you never know what's going to happen.
And the first playoff loss in Lambeau Field for Green Bay Packers was to who? That's okay. We won that too.
That's my blind guess was going to be Atlanta because I just couldn't remember what it was.
Mike Vick, baby.
Well, you know what? Atlanta has done a great job only to get as far as the conference championship, and that's it since the Super Bowl of how long ago? So.
We haven't been around since Super Bowl I. So I mean, we get a few more years to win it, right?
Well, no.
Right. Right.
No. No, because everybody else was getting their teams when they had the opportunity.
I was about to say, just because you show up late to the party doesn't mean you get to be first in line for food.
Hey.
Yeah,
as long
like
as we beat y'all teams.
But you know what? It's just amazing how we end up in the playoffs all the time. Decimated or not, we make no excuses in Green Bay.
Well, you're in the NFC North. You should. You
doesn't
should.
Matter. You have to still win. You still have to win that conference.
Every year,
you should.
You got four.
But you have to win
the
conference.
Games. You have six games in one of the worst divisions in the league. You should.
Okay, but you play 10 other games in a night. So I know some teams that go home on 10-6 records.
Hey.
And in case anybody's wondering why I'm silent, I'm enjoying being on the sidelines for this one.
I'm just saying there are some teams that go home on winning records.
Green, you know what, Jamie? I'm changing my pick. I'm going to Washington. Green Bay goes home. How's that?
I'm going to enjoy the wings that you'll buy me after that.
Oh wow! Okay. Hey, we could do that. But only one of us got to do it. So, Red, you taking that?
I'll take that. Let's take that.
Okay, that's what I'm going to tell you. Take that as I enjoy my lemon pepper.
Oh, wow. Good choice on the wings, too. I might have to go to witness this. Somebody's got to witness it. We might take pictures, put it up on the site that we've actually launched the site, but we're still tweaking it a little bit, so I don't think it's public yet. The studio guys giving me the thumbs down, so I don't think it's ready for public consumption yet. But, you know, that's going to do it for us for the end zone stuff. So I think I'm just going to fire the music. We'll go straight into Falcons.
Let's do it.
I'm in.
Falcons on top.
And, of course, we are here live for Falcon Zone here on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show on Blog Talk Radio, thanks to Impact Media. I'm here with Coach Hill and, of course, the King ATO and Reggie Walker. Welcome back, guys. And without further ado, let's talk a little bit about that finale, New Orleans and Atlanta. Reggie, do you want to start?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know what? Here's my reality. My reality was that I was glad to see after the Carolina game, they came back and at least showed some of the fire that they exhibited in that game. But again, the $100 million guy, as I've now coined him, strikes again. I mean, I don't know. You've been killing New Orleans on the outside the whole game. What forces you to throw in the middle? It took me back to the NFC Championship game against the San Francisco 49ers. You throw it underneath the righty white, you got Tony Gonzalez wide open over the top in the end zone. You throw to Tony Gonzalez any other time, but this time you decide to go to righty. You throw to Julio the whole game, even when he's double, triple covered, but now you decide to go underneath to Devontae Freeman. I don't get it. But, you know, that was one that we just needed to have from a psychological perspective, and I think, you know, he sealed his fate. I think it would not surprise me to not see the $100 million guy here next year.
I agree. He has played himself out of a job. Again, this is a rival game. This is a game that Atlanta needs to finish the season to build on next season. Again, I have no idea why would he throw to a 5'8", 5'9" guy underneath in front of a 6'2", 6'3" linebacker. To me, the play, all you needed was two first downs. Two first downs, get your kick and field goal range, shoot for it, and at worst case scenario, I think as a fan, Reggie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you'd have felt better if it was still a loss if it had been in overtime. At least it would have gone to the fifth quarter. Again, you know, the ball bounces back Atlanta way, and Atlanta has every opportunity to win this game of time. And again, you know, he didn't go for any of his progressions. He the fear factor of coming out of the pocket, getting popped.
Right. Right.
I think that was the biggest piece of it. He could have ran underneath that versus trying to throw that. I mean, as far as he threw the ball, he could have ran. And it just slid, and you know kept the clock moving, and that's exactly what happened. You know, again, you know, they know he's not going to leave the pocket that many times. They know he has tunnel vision when he throws the ball. Again, there's a kink in his mechanics, and I've seen that and said that for the last year, or at least at the beginning of the season, something's wrong with his shoulder. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's ribs. His rotator cuff, but something's wrong. Something is not quite right. And you can see the fear in his eyes every time he's in those pressurized situations. You can just see it. You literally can see deer in the headlights.
And you just said it, Coach. You can see the fear in his eyes. And that's not good when you're talking about the highest paid player on the team, the leader of the team. You see fear in his eyes. And in that Carolina game, I must say, I was so proud of the way that he played in that game, because he played exactly how we need him to play every game, every single game. He showed the team, he showed the fans, he showed himself that this is what we were expecting to see out of him. But he went right back to the same old match. And that's what it has been a big concern of mine for several years now. And for me, you know, we talk about the A.J. McCarrons. We talk about the Aaron Rodgers. We talk about the Tom Brady's. These guys know how to win because they won before. You know, they know what it feels like to win. They know what it means to lose. And I think that, you know, he's shown his hand over and over again, and I think that it doesn't matter what offensive coordinator you bring in here. If you don't have it inside,
That can't be coached. That cannot be coached.
I agree. I think the move should be made with Tampa. Go get Winston. Let them have Ryan across the board. Even swap, no swindle.
I'll take it a step further. I say you make the move and go get Kaepernick. I think cap-wise, he makes sense. He's a year-to-year guy. If he's not that guy, you move on. But it's an even swap, no swindle situation in that case. And you get a guy that at least comes on the field without fear. And that's what you need.
Yeah, I agree. You need someone that has a level of confidence, and Matt Ryan doesn't show that. I think he was under so much pressure in that Carolina game, guys, as to why he performed. I think he overachieved in that game, to be quite honest with you. Because, again, he comes back and shows the inconsistency and the norm against New Orleans, who
and
did not
scary.
Have what Carolina had.
That's yeah. scary. I agree with you, Coach. He overachieved, and that's scary. If that's overachieving, that's scary.
Well, what's
Sorry,
the what's No, I was. It was a good discussion. That's why I stayed out of it. But you guys were saying what I was thinking. But what's the number one position you would say needs an absolute overhaul on the Falcons right now?
Quarterback.
Quarterback is 1A. I think number one overall. It's really a 1A, 1B, 1C. But one on my list is linebacker. Our linebackers
yeah.
are horrible. They are absolutely horrible. 1B in my mind is you've got to get another pass rusher on the other side of Vic Beasley. He was able to show in the Carolina game what he's capable of. And mind you, it just came out this guy's been playing with a torn labrum the whole year.
Yeah.
So get somebody on that side. You got Von Miller coming out. He's a free agent this year. I think at the linebacker's position, it's almost a lock that Bruce Irving ends up here out of Seattle. But you still need linebackers. You don't have a true Mike, and you've got to go find that guy. I don't know if you bring Weatherspoon back or whatever, but you've got to go find that Mike. Our linebacking core is horrible. So in my mind, one is linebacker. Two is you got to get somebody on the defensive end side on that opposite side of Vic Beasley. And three, definitely, you've got one of the things that made Atlanta successful this year, more successful than what everybody expected, because they were 8-8. They were 6-10 or 5-11 or 5-12 or whatever the year before. Dan Quinn created competition at every position, and Coach Hill has spoken on this many a time. When you create competition at every position, it brings the best out of players. That's how they were able to find out about Devontae Freeman, because people forget Devontae Freeman was not the starting running back when the season began.
Nope.
He only got the nod because Coleman got hurt. But he did not create competition at the quarterback position. That's where they were lacking. And it shows. Get somebody in here that makes the $100 million guy believe that my time can be limited, and then you'll see a different Matt or you'll get him out of here. One of the two. But
well,
you've got to create that competition.
You guys were halfway to my proposal a while ago. I can solve two of those positions, or at least start in the linebacker one. With the deal that you guys had going, I'm just going to add one piece. Because there's no way in the world it's going to go straight up Kaepernick for Matt Ryan, because Falcons fans would literally burn down the new stadium. You're going to have to throw somebody in on the San Francisco side to where it makes sense for both sides. Why not Navarro Bowman and have him come over and lead the linebacking core?
I like that. I mean, he's worth the gamble. At the end of the day, here's the reality, is that, Atlanta, whomever's in the front office that may be listening to us now, as a true Atlanta fan, to my core, we don't really care who it is. There's always been this misconception that we had to have a certain type of quarterback that fit the demographics of the city, so forth and so on. I've seen just as many Matt Ryan jerseys out there that I've ever seen, right? We just want a guy that wants to win, that will do whatever it takes to win. And that Carolina game, he showed us what that persona or that psyche. This is what we want to see. So at the end of the day, Jeremy, we could put you at quarterback. If you act like you want to win, we will ride with you until the wheels fall off. I mean, it's just the way the city works. So, yeah, I like that Navarro Bowman pick. I think there's just you can't fill it. You can't go draft with your linebacking core or anybody on your defense at this point. You're going to have to get those pieces. And that offensive line, go get me a center that can snap the freaking ball, please. Please. Go get me a center that can snap the ball. Go bring back Mud Duck. I've been an advocate of bringing back Mud Duck forever because the guy knows how to play the position. Get me a guy that can play the position.
Let me ask you something. Center, whatever happened to Stone?
Stone got hurt.
Okay.
They shifted him to guard, and then he got hurt, and I believe he missed the last three games or so.
Well,
no, I'm saying, why did he lose the guard?
That's been the problem all along. Let's go back. I mean, let's talk about Lamar Holmes, for instance.
Yeah.
That guy was an outstanding lineman. He was just out of position. He's not a tackle. He's a guard. But he's always been forced to play tackle. Same thing with Peter Kontz. Whoever knew what Peter Kontz could do out of Wisconsin? He's been in a championship caliber college team for all these years playing center, but you bring him here and you make him a guard. He's not a guard. He's a center. That came from the Mike Smith, let's make hybrid linemen out of everybody, and that's what you ruined these guys. So we have the notion or the reputation of ruining linemen because we want to play him out of position. Whatever you draft him as, that's what you play him as. Bottom line.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, point well taken. I did not know that they had moved Stone to guard. I thought he did a phenomenal job at center the year before and held his own and proved that he should have been worthy of a look as a starter at that position. But then to move him to guard is trying to move someone in the marching band from trumpet to tuba. You know,
absolutely no idea why he was not the starting center from day one. I mean, at the beginning.
Especially when you get rid of the other two guys.
You got rid of Joe Hawley, who you said would be the starter.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. I don't get it. I do not understand that. I don't understand it.
Plus, him being an SEC center, he's used to that run package type of game. So it seems like to me he would have been a little bit more of a natural fit for what Shanahan likes to do with the zone block.
Don't get me started on Shanahan. I mean, that right there is probably one star, right, is that this guy, and the problem with Shanahan, the big problem with him, and it's the same problem that I have to go through being a Georgia Tech fan, is the stubbornness, right? I call it the Paul Johnson syndrome. You know, Paul Johnson's a guy, for those who out there who don't know, this guy does not have a playbook. He calls the plays out of his head. He'll run the same play over and over and over again just because in his mind somewhere he thinks it's going to work. There were far too many games, and we'll go all the way back, and Jeremy mentioned our seven-game slide. We'll go all the way back to the San Francisco game where Brian Finneran had an interview with the quote-unquote unnamed San Francisco player that said, guess what? All we did was look at former film or previous film, and we studied that. We knew based on the formations what they were going to run because they run the same things over and over again. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. And then, to say, though, the offense was too difficult to learn, Roddy came out and said, listen, you know, offense is offense. You're just learning nomenclature. The bottom line is when you're throwing all of this extra stuff into it that has absolutely nothing to do with anything, you know, and you refuse to change it. And, oh, by the way, when I decide to refuse to actually change it, we go out and beat the team that has no losses. And they
single-handedly, I will not let anybody take away that victory from Atlanta. They beat them from 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
From 0-0. That's the team we expected to see all year. If that team we see with the strength of schedule that we had, and by the way, I just read the other day that Atlanta has the second hardest schedule next year.
Oh, they do.
Go figure. Right?
I was looking at it, yeah.
When you've got the second easiest schedule, if you play every game like you played against Carolina, you're easily 15-1, 14-2. Easily.
Yep.
Hands down. And I just wonder, you know, who's in the room with Arthur Blank when they go through those types of stats? You know, when you bring that to the table, it's a no-brainer. So,
well, one of the things I'd like to add, Reggie, and you and I had a very interesting conversation about this, and you were talking about a couple of weeks ago we had this conversation in reference to you guys' personnel in Atlanta. And at that point, you was like, we're missing a lot of things. We just don't have some it factors in some areas. And I told you I beg to differ, I said, because now the proof is there, factually, would you beat a Carolina? I think the problem has always been the inconsistency of Matt Ryan. I don't want to put it all on Matt Ryan because some balls got dropped, some fumbles happened. But his level of confidence changed the environment. When you go back and look at that Carolina game, he did one thing in that game I said he had to do all year. Matt Ryan, you have to run the ball at least once or twice a game. Somewhere you have to take a third down and own it. He did. He got popped in the hip. He hit the ground. He's hurting. He then turns around and throws a ball to Julio, who literally takes an interception away from someone. He's like, Matt, just give me what you got, and I'll make the rest happen. Matt put everything he had in that throw, and that throw didn't go 60 yards. But at the top end of that play, Julio Jones did what Julio Jones gets paid to do, be the number one receiver. He literally went and tucked that ball away and made something happen. And I think that right there alone, you would have saw the difference in the team. It always has fallen on Matt's shoulder to at least try. That's all they've ever asked of him. They didn't ask him to be a Roethlisberger. They didn't ask him to be one of the, you know, a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning. They've always asked him just to be who you are, but be the best at that. And I think sometimes he just fell short of that. And Carolina
right.
proved it. It's not a personnel issue. Those guys fought hard to be the team that hadn't won a game. They hadn't lost a game.
Well, and now that we're in the last couple minutes here, we can continue this next week for sure, because definitely we'll be back talking playoffs and some more Falcon stuff. Falcon Zone gets the benefit of being a part of End Zone currently, so we get to talk about it every week up until the Super Bowl. But real quickly, we'll go around real quick, and if you could change one thing about the Falcons for this offseason, what would you change? And Coach, we'll go you first.
Yeah. I would start somewhere in the front office with a GM and some picks that have been made and some, you know, some acquisitions that have been taken. So somewhere you need to start in the front office, so that way you can get it down to where Quinn has either give up football operations so Quinn can have it, or come up with a GM that can work best with him right now.
Okay. Reggie?
You force Matt Ryan to restructure, bring in some competition behind Matt Ryan. Bottom line, that's your start. That's
yeah, I like both those moves, but just to be different, I'll say find a slow boat to China and make sure that your offensive coordinator is on it.
That too.
I think all three of those are the best moves. But with a minute to go, we'll just say appreciate you, Coach, and Reggie being on. It was good to get the band back together. And I guess as a parting note, we'll say go Falcons, enjoy the playoffs this weekend. We'll post our picks here in a minute, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right.
All right.